Miss Amy Powell she's an individual who graduated from the University of British Columbia with a master's degree in urban planning. She works for the Tacoma Pierce County Health Department, helping planners integrate health into community planning. Her career covers various planning expertise: community health, public participation, social planning, land use, housing, economic development, parks and recreation. Being a strong advocate for human scale, smart growth, holistic approach to sustainability and participatory planning, Amy has authored many sustainable development strategies for major cities in Canada, Virginia, Washington. Her co-presenter, Ms. Julia Walton, is the co-founder of Studio 3MW. Her work includes physical design and social programming to increase access to healthy environments, provide sustainable response to climate change, and develop strong social systems and community resilience, as well as to support functioning urban ecology and revitalized centers. She helps diverse communities conduct conversations and build agreements that stick. Very important. Specific dialogues are designed to identify shared values and create possibility. Through listening to one another, communities are strengthened, as they will tell you about momentarily.
Thank you. Thank you, Shelley. The topic that I'm presenting today is along smart growth and healthy community design best practices and tools. But here today, in particular, we present to you a toolbox by the name of Healthy Community Planning Toolbox. And that's free, it's on website, and the link is on the slide eventually, and it's free for all to use. I think what I'm hearing from the discussion today, there are a lot of solutions in the toolbox that we'll be able to offer. I and Julia have nothing to disclose. The only reason why we are here is that we, and several of us as well, are planners with a planning profession background, and we are trying to bridge the gap between the planning profession as well as the public health sector, and that's why it brings us to here. The toolbox that I referred to earlier that was prepared by the Tacoma Pierce County Health Department is actually something that's built on a wide range of recent research that prompts us to bring about this toolbox. Julia, can you explain to us what's the latest research telling us?
Sure. We want to just highlight some of the foundational research that really was the basis for the integration, the nexus, and the joining of the health and planning fields. So you're probably familiar with some of this, but physical activity linked with urban form and urban sprawl, local food environments linked with obesity and diabetes, mixed-use neighborhoods linked with public safety, childhood obesity linked with proximity to parks and recreation, and zip codes in place linked with lifetime expectancy. The research links are in our toolbox, and so you can go and find that and other foundational research in our toolbox. So, Amy, what are the other reasons we might want to work together between our professions?
Let me highlight some of the emerging trends from both professions. Looking from the public health perspective, they are moving away from individualized care towards more of a population-based, upstream preventive approach by going through policy interventions. If the particular focus on health equity, thinking about Healthy People 2020, they are strengthening the verbiage of encouraging or even achieving health equity in the next 20 years. Now here, from a community planning perspective, we are also focusing at the same time on smart growth principles about how to achieve sustainable development. And at the same time, they are pretty much talking about an inclusive participatory planning process, trying to make planning process more transparent. Now, if you think about these two trends, they provide us a very common basis or ground for the two professions to come together to address, in particular, built environment issues using policy intervention methods, looking at land use policies in particular. Julia, can you explain to us what are some of the smart growth principles that would support public health?
Yeah, the EPA has established the 10 principles of smart growth, for lots of purposes, including sustainability, compact cities, a lot of things that are in the physical and social realms. But we really can summarize those in these four categories that you see in this diagram on the left, including mix of land uses. They relate to public health priorities such as improved physical activity and increased social interaction. building attractive communities with choices and a sense of place help to include close the gap in health disparities and increase social cohesion in communities. Preservation and provision of open space, functioning ecologies, preservation of farmland, those kinds of things are related to environmental health, such as clean air, clean water, and clean soil, and also to health and wellness in terms of emotional well-being and mental wellness. And lastly, fair development decisions and community collaborations, all levels of public involvement and public input help achieve health equity and help reduce displacement, help communities really come together and know one another. So what about that status quo? What if our planners say, well, we lost half of our staff, we don't have any federal grants, we don't know what to do. We get the idea, but we don't know what to do. So we'll put a couple words in the comp plan about it, but we're going to maintain the status quo. How would that work?
Well, if we are going to maintain the status quo, it's going to be a strategy. The reason is the cost, the health burden to society is too huge to carry, particularly the impact on the vulnerable populations. If we are not going to do a game-changing strategy by addressing the needs of the underserved, by not breaking the silos between the two professions, and as well as not considering health in each of the planning steps in the planning process, down the road, we as a society have to pay the health cost. That's why we produce a toolbox to help with the process. The toolbox addresses not only just physical fitness. We are going to create healthy communities for all, which includes the social, emotional, and mental health of the people that live in there. So, Julia, tell us about how can we start, if we as a health professionals trying to help the local planners, how can we help them?
Well, we kind of want to meet them where they are. I mean, we're working with the 24 jurisdictions in Pierce County, which include Tacoma, which is the largest city, and some smaller cities that are built along the highway with maybe 1,000 people. So they're very different. So they're all doing different things. And so we want to meet them where they are. And wherever they are, you can join in at any kind of type of or level of planning, if you will. So the different states have different requirements for planning, but there are some commonalities to all. So most of them is talked about by Lindsay and our previous speakers are that, you know, most communities are doing comprehensive plans or general plans, and so that's one area where you can intervene, and that's, say, in Washington State where we are today, which is periodically, including now, the urban counties have to update their comprehensive plans by 2015, and so this is a great opportunity for us to work with those jurisdictions there. Then they're also integrating health into functional or what we call topical plans, and these could include sustainability plans. There's that nexus kind of with, I heard somebody call it green health the other day, but also parks and recreation plans, which are done separately, say in Washington, and integrated into comprehensive plans. Same thing with transportation master plans. They're often a separate element that's adopted by reference. These can be updated periodically in your communities as well as ours at different times. So these are all opportunities, as well as neighborhood or what they call specific plans, sub-area plans, master plans, and economic development plans. So there are many opportunities. It's not like we have to wait until 2015 until the right thing comes along.
So tell me more about why are we doing planning? What's the purpose of doing planning?
We're doing it for quality of life. We use that as our overarching umbrella. Actually, the language is very important. We're working in one of our towns now where we're not going to go in and say, well, did you realize that your town has the lowest health status in the county and the highest obesity rates? You know, that's not where we start. We actually are doing it for quality of life, including sustainability, including economic prosperity, including building places where people can raise children, including places where communities can come together. And all of that relates to happiness or what we talk about in terms of quality of life or well-being. That's really what it's all about. It's really about access to opportunity, equal access to opportunity, access, equitable access. That's really the overarching theme where all of these things gel. And for whom are we planning? And tell us about the Invisibles and who our partners are.
Sure, yeah. Supposedly, we are planning for each and everyone in the community. But unfortunately, in today's actual situations, a lot of planning staff are just planning for the vocal ones, where the voices can be easily heard. They are not planning for the Invisibles. Unfortunately, I'm sure you're all aware of the 08 California Newsreel documentary on the topic of an unnatural cost is inequity making us sick. In that documentary, it points out there are vulnerable groups. If we are not addressing their needs from the get-go, eventually their health burden is on us. The reason is because they do not have the sense of control over their quality of life, control over their own destiny, their built environment, the places that they live, and place does matter. And the groups that were identified in the documentary would include new immigrants, single parents with kids, the young generation, the poor and the homeless, the seniors and those with chronic disability eventually, and people of all color. But in most cases, planning department at this current state with the financial situation are unlikely to outreach those groups. And that's why we need the public health professionals to come into the mix and address their needs from the get-go. And the toolbox is all about providing opportunities to each of those in this group.
So tell us about what we mean by healthy community and what Tacoma Pierce County Health Department has defined as a healthy community.
Well, to bridge the two professions, we try to define healthy communities as healthy and sustainable places built on a balanced foundation of people, prosperity, and planet. We talk about places because, as I mentioned earlier, place does matter. And it's going to be built on a balanced foundation. It's not going to be lopsided, based on the three pillars of sustainable development. They are people, which is the equity side of the equation. In here, we talk about things like social cohesion. We talk about safety nets. We also talk about bridging the variety groups. We talk about achieving social equity and health equity. We also talk about prosperity. In this pillar, which is the economy side, we talk about creating jobs, creating a healthy environment to support and attract businesses. And we also talk about things like how to make sure jobs are close to where they could easily move to, like active transportation modes and other alternatives. On the planet, we address the natural environment in particular. Here, we are thinking about clean air, clean water, soil, and also want to address the impact of climate change. Tell us about the mission of good planning.
So the mission is really to provide equal access, like I said, to opportunity, all ages, all ethnic groups, all levels of income. And in particular, we think of it in terms of the infrastructure, hard and soft infrastructure, in terms of the physical infrastructure and the social infrastructure of place. Now, Amy worked with 24 planners. Tell us what they were telling us about their ability and their to integrate health into planning, their comprehensive plans.
Yeah, I worked with planners within the county, and I heard them loud and clear that they do not have enough resources. They do not have money to look at the different process to incorporate health. They do not have the expertise to do so. They also mentioned about they need tools and evidence, policy language to help them with the comp plan. There is a lack of political support. They also asked me questions like, who are the underserved? Because in most of the rural communities, most of the residents there are predominantly white, and they say, I don't have any underserved populations. So here, as a health professional, we explain to them who are them from the demographic point of view. And how can I wear a health lens? And how can we integrate health? So as a result of hearing what they said, Julia and I roll up our sleeves and start pulling a toolbox together. Julia, tell us about what's inside the toolbox.
So there are kind of two levels. It's an evidence-based toolbox that addresses best practices. We pull together best practices. I can't say that out loud. So we have two sort of levels. One are the process tools. How do you put the plan together and how do you use it, the health lens? And then what is the policy language or what are the policy interventions that we might want to make to address disparities in physical and mental health?
This is the link. We'll mention the link later on. Yeah, we particularly focus on process too. This is something that the planners have not even thought about and asked for. But however we think to incorporate and to ensure to achieve equity, health equity, we need to think about how we do the planning process differently. Here we are suggesting them to wear a health lens inside each individual process. here are some of the familiar steps of the planning process that, which Lindsay and Adam spoke about earlier. Each step in the toolbox, we have indicated to them how you can wear the health lens. And there are information and documents that help them to do so. For example, under community assessment, we provide a list of questions for them to think about health in their conversation with the community. For example, in the under the environmental policy review stage, we have the EIS guidebook to help them with it. And in the, for example, in the visioning toolbox, here we ask them to help wear the health lens, and this is what we mean. Engage the public to come up with the collective aspirations of your community.
So, and then we have policy tools. So we call this our conceptual logic model. And so on the left you see, well, first of all, this is a simulation of our live links on our website. But on the, so the blue are where there are live links that take you to the tools. So we look on the left, these are the comprehensive plan elements that are basically required in Washington and probably in most states. We add health and well-being, which may or may not be a separate chapter, as was discussed. Then we're looking at the following built environment outcomes: increased physical activity, increased access to healthy foods, increased safety and reduced injury, stronger placemaking, access to opportunity, and improved natural environment. And again, they're linked back to the healthy community outcomes. And so this was conceptually how we put our model together to work with, and we show people that this is the linkage that goes through to the outcomes that we're looking for. And then we actually have these six categories that we worked with then, which are the health outcomes: physical activity, access to healthy foods, natural environment, transportation, parks and open space, and safety and injury. So we produced a logic model like this, again with the live links on the left to the comprehensive plan elements, such as land use, capital facilities, and parks and recreation. And we walk people through, this is really a cause and effect. Because planners say, well, how do we tell people? How do we know? We have the research evidence, we're doing indicators to monitor these kinds of things, but how do we explain that to them in terms of if you do this, these will be the outcomes? And so we make policy interventions, say with land use, for placemaking in particular, with mixed use place types like Buffalo's Green Code, where they went from a neighborhood-based urban form into a code. We also work at a public space level on that. We look at urban design and healthy places, community identity, these kinds of things. Capital facilities located in central places and equitably distributed throughout the community, both the ones that have a negative, so-called, and a positive benefit. We look at parks and recreation in terms of community building. So we make these policy interventions, then we have these built environment outcomes, which include really public spaces for community and culture use, increased activity and use of public places and public spaces, and well-maintained public and private facilities as well. Then in the capital facility side, again, it's centrally located, accessible to all. That's the best return on investment that you can get. Parks and recreation, it's really diverse, accessible. And then you have the outcomes that are really the behavior side, which can be measured. So actually we're starting an HIA with a city in Pearson King County, where we're actually looking at measuring both behavior and built environment changes. So we set that up from the very beginning.
Let me sum up of how we can apply the toolbox, and then maybe you can also help the planners to apply as well. Now you have a set of tools and the language to talk to the planners. Well, you can help them with analyzing the data because we are the ones who are data-driven. We can provide them with understanding their own demographics and putting the faces of the people in their planning process. And we can help them maximizing the community assessment process by using the tools there to incorporate health conversation in their process. We can help them with identifying priorities with the public. And we also to help them to turn the health priorities and performance measures. Within the toolbox, there are a set of performance measures that you can actually use and help them to track. And then we can help them with using logic models, because using logic models is very powerful to make your case to argue in front of the elected officials.
Yeah, the logic models actually link you to there are 50 tools that are cross-referenced in these categories that we're talking about, the health outcomes and the comprehensive plan elements. And so you can sort back and forth, and we emphasize to everyone, you right-size it to your community. Everyone is not expected to do the gold standard for everything, but really right-size it to your community based on what your community assessment tells you are the highest needs and priorities in your community. Because sometimes people go with these comprehensive plan updates as what do we have to do to meet the minimum state requirements and pass the checklist. And so we're really kind of trying to shift that lens to what are the highest needs in your community that you can address through normal planning means. We're also just providing you, there's a similar diagram to this that shows the process layer and the policy interventions for health in our on our website in the toolbox, but this one we also developed for HIA because a lot of people are interested in HIA and comprehensive planning, and the most powerful way that you can do that is to set them up together at the very beginning and link them in each stage of the planning process. And so this diagram shows how to do that with a monitoring and evaluation loop, coming back to changing your recommendations through as you monitor through time. And so we're starting with plan definition. That's the scoping phase. So that's where you figure out what is our plan going to be, what's it going to include, how much time do we have, what are our resources, and if we're going to do an HIA, how do we, what are our geographies of interest, what are our populations of interest, what is the temporal and geographic boundary of what we're going to do. Public outreach plan, looking at the baseline assessment so that the public is made aware of what the issues are in the community that we discover. Visioning, that's when you can develop indicators and measures that you use to monitor throughout your comprehensive plan and your HIA process and its implementation. Policy development, that's where you do an impact assessment and make additional recommendations. And then review and adoption, that's the reporting phase of an HIA. And then you have implementation and monitoring as well as evaluation.
I'm not going to run through this list here because I've talked already, but I think one thing we can do is we can provide them with letters of support when in front of the elected officials and help them to seek grants, because one way of asking them to make sure they have health in their comp plan is that there are a lot of grants from the health sector that will support the implementation. And this is the link to the website. Thank you.